Welcome back, everyone. I am Cass PNC, and I'm joined, as usual, by my partner in crime, Mr. Bennett Tomlin. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a good day. How are you doing, Cass?
Yeah, good. Again, you know, not in a Montenegrin prison, not getting sued by the CFTC, not getting sued by the SEC. By any measure, then, I guess I'm good, right? What a wacky day it's been. What a wacky week. Here we are again. Binance, CZ, this litany of other companies under the umbrella of both of them, are getting sued by the CFTC, the Commodities Futures and Trading Commission. And man, this is a 74-page banger of a lawsuit that they're bringing against them. You want to get us started?
Sure. I mean, there was a lot in here. I think there's a few different things this revealed. One, it discussed Binance trading on Binance. So this is CZ's personal accounts, the Merit Peak accounts, the Sigma Chain AG accounts. And all in all, allegedly, for everything we say for the rest of this episode, okay? Allegedly, CZ controlled 300 accounts that were trading on Binance, and it was specifically called the Quant Desk, where they run their proprietary trading, which was hilarious because on the Binance AMA Spaces on November 14th, right after the collapse of FTX, CZ goes in there and says, "We're just a simple exchange. We're not trading futures. We're not trading to make a profit. We don't run a quant firm or anything like that. We're just matching customer orders. Very simple." And then this lawsuit comes out today and says, no, you had 300 accounts doing proprietary trading underneath you. So we can get more into that. There's also a whole bunch of discussions of their KYC AML failures, the number of people in the U.S. they were serving, the way they treated their VIP customers, which is really good, and just broadly a truly shocking case. So you know what, Cass? You pick which one of those you want us to talk about first.
I'm just going to go ahead and go by what I started highlighting as I went through this document. I think the first thing that stuck out to me, first of all, Samuel Lim, I'm sure other people who are much more familiar with Binance than I am know about this guy. I don't know anything about this guy. I'd never heard of this guy before today. I think what's weird is that it says Binance placed Lim on paid administrative leave in or around May 2022, but continues to employ Lim. I don't understand that. I don't know why you would be on administrative leave for, maybe you had a baby. They also don't seem like the kind of employer that would give you a bunch of time to be off as a parent or for sick leave or for any, why is he off but getting paid? I'm curious. I know you don't know the answer to that. I just thought that was weird. I don't know who this Samuel Lim is, if he's the same one who's involved in compliance for a bunch of other large companies and banks. So I'm not going to mention this other Samuel Lim because I don't know if it's the same. That I would assume that's a relatively common name. So I'm not sure if this is the same one. If it is, he doesn't list it on his LinkedIn. But then let's keep going here. Okay, so here's a big one. The CFTC says certain digital assets, including BTC, ETH, LTC, and at least two fiat-backed stablecoins, Tether and Binance USD, as well as other virtual currencies as alleged herein, are commodities. So USDT and BUSD, as well as apparently Ethereum and Litecoin are, I think BTC, it was already generally widely accepted that that was a commodity as viewed by the U.S. regulatory regime. But These other guys seem like news, possibly. What do you think?
The CFTC has argued before that Ethereum might be a commodity, especially if it ends up not being a security. Same for Tether. And so I can imagine that applying to other stable coins as well. So none of that.
Isn't the SEC also arguing that stable coins are their jurisdiction, though?
Yeah, they might be in both. Which is really getting back to like fundamentally what we talked about. This isn't the point of today's episode, but like in the Stable Act, like legislation like that moves these things into the banking framework eliminates the problem of stablecoins ending up being treated as either a commodity or a security. But that's not why we're here today.
No, I just thought that was interesting. I guess here is one of the first things we can delve further into. You mentioned VIP customers. 0.51 in this lawsuit, it says, another important benefit that Binance has provided its VIP customers is prompt notification of any law enforcement inquiry concerning their account. According to a policy titled, quote, for management of LE requests for information and funds transfer, created by Samuel Lim, based on directions from Zhao, Binance instructed its VIP team to notify a customer at point of account freeze based on a request from a law enforcement agency, and immediately after the unfreeze, VIP team is to contact the user through all available means to inform him or her that his account has been frozen or unfrozen. Do not directly tell the user to run, just tell them their account has been unfrozen and it was investigated by a three-letter agency. If the user is a big trader or a smart one, he or she will get the hint. Pretty damning, I would think, right?
The Binance early warning system. If you trade enough on Binance, you'll know when the SEC or the CFTC is trying to look into your market manipulation because Binance will tell you. Yeah, no, that seemed like a really bad policy, especially one to like have in writing as part of your like VIP management process, especially when CZ makes that point. There's another point where he specifically says, don't put this in writing. When he's talking about one of these VIPs, he's like, tell them not to connect from a US IP. Don't put any of this in writing, in a message he put in writing to one of his team members. And this whole thing was in writing.
We keep talking about it because it just keeps happening. And a couple things that I noticed are going to be get by this are Signal, which they specifically call out, again, similar to FTX, where they talk about the auto-delete and encrypted messaging, and VPNs, which CZ and executives, along with people at FTX, like Sam Bankman-Fried, just straight up told people publicly, you know, if you want to still access the platform, just use a VPN. It seems like a bad idea to be saying that stuff aloud. It seems like it could cause issues for VPN providers.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a problem for VPN providers. I don't think the CFTC is mad at NordVPN. I think the CFTC mad at Samuel Lim and Changpeng Zhao.
No, the CFTC isn't, but I bet that three-letter agencies might be. And I think that we're setting up Congress to get stupid about it.
Oh, I'm sure.
I would expect Congress to get upset about this and be like, maybe we should ban VPNs. Anyway, can we talk about how much it's just like you have had access to? Because I'm kind of like shocked by this.
Yes. Especially there was one part here that seems to suggest that they have Changpeng Zhao's phone or unencrypted backups thereof, because they describe specific Signal chats that were set to auto-delete that Changpeng Zhao was in and say these were obtained from his phone. If the feds have CZ's phone, along with Nishad Singh's, Gary Wang's, Carolyn Ellison's, and like all these other people, that's a lot of information. That's a lot of stuff that could be coming out in the coming weeks or months. The other thing that I thought was, like, in that sense of all this data is, I think there's kind of a, it feels like there might be a whistleblower involved for some of this as well. But yeah, there's like, they have internal financial reports. They have internal chat logs. They've got like discussions between customer service representatives and US-based trading firms. So the CFTC had a really like pretty substantial amount of evidence here.
I don't know. It seems, like you said, it seems like almost multiple sources of information. So I don't know how you tackle this as a mole issue. That's probably the first thing that CZ is thinking about as of today, not the merits of the lawsuit or how they're going to get rid of it or any of this stuff. Probably just wondering, throwing away all of his phones and computers and starting in. Let's see. Point 59. An option seller is one counterparty to an options transaction. So when Binance sells options, it is trading against its customers. Thought that was an interesting way of discussing options trading, and sets them up to look bad again.
Well, yeah. And we knew they were also engaged, like they were one side of their over-the-counter trades as well. They had these 300 accounts. Like you said, there were even periods where Binance was the only one selling the options on Binance. Like they were all of the liquidity. And so, yeah, CZ, contrary to his statements, appears to have been regularly trading against Binance customers.
Let's keep going here. So Leo Schwartz, on Twitter, a writer for Fortune, pointed out that a employee wrote that they need to make sure the product does not look like a gambling game. Users might get addicted to these products, so we need to enhance responsible trading, or you could say playing. So I think that's about as far as they got in terms of being concerned for customers and how the gamification of the trading platform will harm them. And that sounds about where the concern stopped, because it not two paragraphs down, we're talking about 125x leverage in perpetual contracts.
Yeah, which is fundamentally gambling. We can pretend it's trading, but it's really gambling. I think the other thing that was, we've known this for a while, but what I think the CFTC did a good job of laying out is how pervasive U.S. persons using Binance was, even after Binance started to pretend that was untrue. And like Binance at points in their past even recruited what they call their angels, which are volunteers who help promote Binance, from U.S. persons to interact with U.S. people. There was internal financial reporting that showed at different times that 16 to 19% of the revenue could be attributed to the United States. For the first several years, and we knew this because we were around back then, they didn't do anything to stop U.S. customers, right? It was just a complete free-for-all. And like even Lim at one point said in a message in 2018, there is no fucking way in hell I am signing off as the CCO for the OFAC shit. Like, he didn't want to sign off on the corporate documents that Binance had to submit saying, yeah, we're compliant with OFAC, because he didn't think they were compliant with OFAC. And hilariously, in a very Bitfinex move that you'll recognize, Cass, in 2019, when they launched Binance US and then started making token gestures that they were actually pushing people there. And so they had a pop-up that would come up if you connected from a US IP, and you had to check a box saying, no, I'm not actually a US person. And so once you checked the box, it was a free-for-all again. For people who don't understand the Bitfinex reference, back around the same period in 2019, the Block was able to register a user account on Bitfinex out of New York with the name I Am New York Resident. And similarly, all they had to do was check a single checkbox to self-certify that they were not from New York. So this is like a classic crypto compliance strategy, you know? And eventually they realized this was going to be a problem. Like, you get into like 2020, and on their internal documents, they told people to change their country code from U.S. to unknown, so that when they were looking at the analysis, they wouldn't be as easily attributable to the U.S. And like when trading firms would connect, there was one trading firm B, that connected from a U.S.-based IP. And so like when Binance had to go through the show of pretending to ban them, they had one of the traders from that firm set up a personal account out of like Hong Kong, and then they ran that whole firm's trading activities through that individual's account until they could set up a new corporate entity in Jersey that was far enough dissociated that it didn't look like it had ultimate beneficial owners in the US, and then they were able to come back on Binance totally fine. Like, it was just abject failures at preventing people from the US from trading for multiple years.
I also just read, as I was going through this, that they, before we jumped on, that when they hired an auditing group for trying to be perceived as, you know, following protocols, they hired a shitty, I think that was the exact terminology they used, a shit ass or something.
Yeah.
They said something like, just some crappy fucking dumb auditor that's going to do a bad job and doesn't know what they're doing.
Do we know which auditor that was?
This
was one of their like cybersecurity auditors, like their compliance auditors, not their financial auditors. So I don't think we would recognize it. But you're right. Like it says in the lawsuit, they were intentionally searching out the one they thought would be the laziest and would do the least etchy check any of this stuff. So they could say, look it, they gave us a report. It says we're fine.
Yeah, this is why I was drawn to that, because I was like, I think there's this running joke, you know, top 12 auditors and all of this idea of like, oh, these guys are hiring shitty auditors on purpose. And I think people think, no, they're not. They're just hiring whoever is willing to work with them. And I'm like, I don't know about that. Like, this kind of tells me that there is an actual, they're like going out of their way to hire the least competent people a lot of the time. Not to say that that's always the case, but like, I do think that it can be as proven in this, that like, it definitely can be that they purposely hire crappy auditors and stuff.
Performative compliance. They want to like,
exactly,
do the barest minimum to look like they're doing compliance without actually having to do it. There's one thing that just really came into my mind that I want to make sure I don't forget. Point number 98 in the lawsuit, they talked, and I remember this from 2021, they announced that they were going to verify every single user on Binance. And I'm like, okay, I figured they were going to have to do this eventually, right? Legal and regulatory pressure was going to make this Wild West kind of go legit, and they were going to end up eventually paying some fine to the CFTC and would get to continue operating. And I figured this is like what was happening in the background back in 2021. And I'll get back to that date in a second. They announced they were going to have all their users verify their accounts. However, and that if they didn't by October 19th, 2021, they were going to be banned from the platform. They just didn't do that. They said they were going to do it, just didn't go through with it. And apparently as of February 2022, like up to 40% of their customer base was still not verified. And this is like especially wild to me because the CFTC state, or not the CFTC, the Binance statement that was given to Protos about this lawsuit said that they have been working with the CFTC for 2 years and that this lawsuit was very unexpected. 2 years ago would be 2021. And what did I just say? I thought when that happened, it was an attempt for them to like pretend to be compliant so they could pay some fine and make these lawsuits go away, like Bitfinex did with the CFTC back in 2015, right? But it turns out they just didn't go through with what they were supposed to do. They didn't actually do the KYC they said they were doing.
Yeah, the sheer level of, I don't know what to term it, like purposeful negligence, I don't know. I don't think anyone sees this CFTC lawsuit and goes, oh man, CFTC, bring in the hammer. That's not what's happening here. Like they're not bringing the hammer just because They're the CFTC. They can, like, they're not really going to hurt you. But the data that they're providing in this lawsuit is kind of terrifying, because it tells me that, like, man, I just would not be surprised. This isn't to say anything's happening. And I certainly know as much as the idiot down the street. I don't know anything about anything. But, like, man, this looks ripe for the Department of Justice. It just looks ripe for them.
Yes. And that's what we've really been kind of leading up towards here and leading up to, I feel like, for our last several episodes about Binance, right? And there was one kind of particularly funny line that came from Lim that kind of touched on that, where he said, let me find this. U.S. users equals CFTC equals civil case, can pay fine and settle. No KYC equals BSA Act equals criminal case, have to go to jail. And if you read through the lawsuit carefully from the CFTC here, they reference that these things might be in violation of the Bank Secrecy Act. And the Bank Secrecy Act is one of the things that ended up taking out Arthur Hayes and making him eventually go into the Department of Justice. And we know that there's been an ongoing Department of Justice investigation that the Western Washington prosecutors out of Seattle believe they have enough information to indict Binance and Changpeng Zhaowen, but it's supposedly been held up by MLARS. This substantial of a civil case that feels as though it's discussing multiple things that could potentially be criminal issues makes me think that if there is an indictment coming, it may be soon. Like, this has laid out a lot of violations.
And the reason I think this Samuel Lim guy, the same one on LinkedIn, is because they're supposedly both in Singapore. But so if he's in Singapore and CZ, according to this lawsuit, CZ is in Dubai. Let's keep walking down this hypothetical here. If these executives get called in by the DOJ, I mean, who cares, right?
I mean, yeah, who cares? But also, like, I think the more, once or if CZ and whoever else is a fugitive, even if they can't easily arrest them because they've positioned themselves in non-extradition countries, they make it really easy for every other company to justify cutting off Binance's accounts, access to the banks, going after their subsidiaries and shutting those down, right? It gives them a very easy pretext to take all these other actions that don't necessarily go after CZ the person, but do go after Binance, the organization made up of dozens and dozens of entities spread across all these different countries.
Yeah. While I will admit that the amount of regulatory enforcement in the past month or so has surprised even me, just because it has happened swiftly and all at once, I still have a bit of hesitation. And look, we did see the successful, like, I mean, Sam Bankman-Fried is, he's out on house arrest, but he's going to go to prison. Like, it's over.
So let's pause and think of the last couple years, right? SBF is indicted. Do Kwon is indicted. Happened moments after we finished our last live stream. Do Kwon gets indicted. Mashinsky's being pursued for fraud charges in New York, right? Like, a lot of the major bad actors of the last couple years actually are, like, either fugitives or, like, in custody for various cases. There has been a meaningful change in the posture of regulators and law enforcement towards cryptocurrency. They fundamentally don't seem to have the same patience for it they've had in the past and seem far more willing to bring cases and indict. Like, and that's kind of like the challenge with this Binance complaint, right? Is they're talking about behavior that dates back to 2017, 2018, and 2019. In 2023, And reading it, like, you do come away kind of feeling like, really, you had to wait till 2023 to do anything about these egregious violations? That seems kind of like bullshit. And so what I think has changed is kind of the political landscape around these regulators and around law enforcement that is letting them bring some of these cases and stuff now.
I will say that they lay out a lot of relatively convincing arguments in this. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that people will take issue with and that I haven't, you know, probably if I read line by line, I'll take away some different understandings and have my own issues with it as well. Maybe, I don't know, but like from what I've read, it does seem pretty damning. And, you know, I know innocent until proven guilty and all of that. But sorry, go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. There is one last thing that I want to kind of push on with the federal government's change in stance towards these things. And like that comes back to the Hydra Darknet marketplace. That was a major takedown for the United States Department of Justice. And they've used it to take down some of these related entities. And like there was the National Cryptocurrency Enforcement Task Force and the DOJ did their press conference when they took out BitsLotto. And it was hilarious because it was fucking BitsLotto. But the other major counterparty for Hydra besides local Bitcoins and besides BitsLotto is Binance. And in this CFTC lawsuit, Stephen Lim at one point was discussing a customer who appeared to be associated with illicit activity and said, let him know to be careful with his flow of funds, especially from darknet like Hydra. He can come back with a new account, but this current one has to go. It's tainted. I think the fact that Hydra made its way into this CFTC case is the biggest clue that there is a major federal case coming for Binance.
I'm curious. So when they say at the very end of this, the takeaway here obviously we've given some takeaways of what it could mean and all of these hypotheticals, but the conclusion of this lawsuit, they say jury trial demanded. Plaintiff hereby demands a jury trial on all issues, so triable. So is CZ coming to America? So he can just have his lawyers represent him at this trial?
I don't know the details, but I'm pretty sure he's not coming to America.
They also strictly lay out that he's a Canadian citizen, which I know everyone, we all know that, but like, I bet he doesn't go to Canada ever either. So I'm kind of like, he's probably a citizen of 14 different countries. Yeah. So I'm curious why maybe they just mean that's where he grew up and spent his adulthood until he left.
Or where they've been able to easily and confidently like establish he does have a citizenship, right? Like it's pretty easy for them to call up Canadian authorities and get a straight answer on that. It may be more difficult for some of the other places that he may have passports. And they may be under variations of his name, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I don't know if there's anything else you want to kind of lay out here. This Samuel Lim guy is like, I am fascinated by this new actor appearing in the play that is Binance. So I'm looking, the things he says throughout this entire thing are absurd. And he clearly spends a lot of time on cryptocurrency Twitter just based on the way he types and the things he says. So I'm sure he's out there somewhere. He's probably not watching us, but he's on cryptocurrency Twitter somewhere. And I'm just wondering who this guy is. I hope someone figures it out. I'm looking forward to a nice long, hopefully like a New York Times long look, and they're going to go meet up with Samuel Lim and spend a day with him. I don't know. I just want to know who this is. They do make it clear that CZ is like the number one guy, which I think there's been kind of questions about that before, right?
There have been conspiracies about that before. I think that it's been pretty... I've never felt like there was someone standing behind CZ, you know?
I mean, yeah, fair enough. I guess that's true. But also, how would we have any idea?
That's true.
I will say that, I don't know. Everyone should take a look at this lawsuit. Just simply reading the things that Samuel Lim puts into writing as the chief compliance officer are truly mind-boggling. I'm not like, maybe, I guess that's your job, right? Like you are chief compliance officer. You have to write back to people and answer their questions about compliance issues. You have to, I mean, I don't know. Why aren't they taking phone calls?
But you're right. Like, and besides Lim, there was the money laundering reporting officer under Binance who once complained to Lim that she needed to write a fake annual MLRO report to Binance Board of Directors, WTF, because Binance didn't have a board of directors. And Lim's response was just, oh, don't worry, management will sign it. It'll be fine. And like at another point in a chat with Lim, she's like, I has no confidence in our geofencing, in all caps, like the 2000 and whatever cat meme I can has cheeseburger. Or in another point, when talking about offloading clients, Lim was like, don't need to be so strict. Offboarding equals bad in CZ's eyes. Like,
I assume most people who watch know about, and I feel like this has been a pretty common thing for most cryptocurrency, maybe they don't do it anymore, but for most cryptocurrency exchanges, it was pretty common that you had this, like, these tiers of amounts of money, let's not call it money, digital assets, the amount of in US dollar, it'll be in US dollars or in Bitcoin or in Ethereum. Like, you can move X amount onto and off of the exchange up to this amount without having to do KYC or AML. And I always thought, like, how could the legal limit possibly be $40,000 or like 100K? Like, it just doesn't. That seems absurd. Like, just grant, given how, I, not to suggest that I think the numbers that the U.S. operates with when it comes to suspicious activity reports. So the ongoing belief, I think, or like, I think what banking people say is that there's a $10,000. That's when the flag gets thrown up. And you can be safe to say that if you do 9,999 or 9,998, you're probably getting flagged too.
And possibly getting referred for a structuring charge.
Right. Yes, if you do more than one, yes. That might be stupid. And the idea that you could move $50,000 worth of digital assets onto and off without getting any KYC, AML, I just always kind of boggled my mind that was not immediately getting flagged by government agents and saying, like, hello, big problem. Like, well, there's got to be money launderers using the plat. There has to be.
Has to be. And it's even worse than you just said, because they had a stated 2 Bitcoin limit. But when there were certain VIPs in Wales, they would be encouraged or allowed to set up non-KYC accounts, despite Binance clearly knowing who's associated with it, and they would remove that withdrawal limit from those non-KYC accounts. And, like, clearly if they're removing it, they must know it's connected to some whale, but they're still not collecting the Know Your Customer information on those accounts. That's wild. That's, like, clearly trying to flout and violate the rules. It's just blatant.
That's insane that they would, especially that they would do this in writing. That's insane. But also, like, if we want to look outside that scope, they set up this, like, 2 Bitcoin limit, like, for one account, right? So just set up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, set up your 25. 5 different accounts and do it however you need to do it. It's absurd to think that 2 limit for one account is going to stop anyone determined enough to move money through this platform. Yeah,
or just withdraw 50K a day, 5 days a week. That's 250K per week in terms of like an obscuring mechanism for cash. 250K a week through a single account is a lot.
For an individual. Yes.
Sure, but no, like
you're not thinking big enough at all.
No,
for a billion dollar enterprise, that's fucking nothing, right?
Yeah, sure, like, sure. But like even like in terms of like common money laundering steps, being able to pass through that much week after week, onward and onward, is like a high amount of flow through a single thing. And that's just with one account. Like you said, you could have a dozen, could have 100.
Exactly.
40% of their users as of February 2022 might not have had KYC.
CZ and Binance had 300. They had 300 of their own account, and CZ had two personal accounts, and Binance had 300 or whatever it was. So it's like, yeah, clearly that this is being used in the exact way that, like, you want to talk about the most skeptical, critical people of cryptocurrency. We don't talk about the criminality of it. I think it's hyped up more than it's actual. I think its main use case is speculation. I continue to believe that. But like, I think there are genuinely people out there saying like, it's only used for bad things and shit like this. Like, sure does make them look possibly correct, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. I think especially when you, especially when you look at the fact that of those 300 Binance accounts, they were reportedly exempted from the anti-fraud, the anti-manipulation surveillance, and weren't tracked as part of Binance's insider trading policy.
Yeah, they probably don't even have to abide by leverage policies either. Guess maybe we'll find that out later on down the line, huh? I don't know. All of it sounds bad. It doesn't mean, like, I'm not surprised by any of this. I'm just surprised it's in writing, that the government gained access to all of this in writing, and that the government, that the first one to put it out and spell it out like this in such a concise way is the CFTC. Like, all of that is kind of surprising to me, but I don't know. Fascinating, crazy day. Another fascinating, crazy day.
Absolutely. Who knows what tomorrow will bring?
Cascoin is fine, obviously. But I will say we have relied on Binance as our main market maker since the collapse of FTX, because obviously before this, FTX was the main market maker. Alameda Research was our main market maker before that. So we're stressing a little bit, but everything should be fine.
It'll be fine.
The reserves are backed one-to-one.
Everything's safe.